Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Amen. Our readings offer us a lot this morning and more, of course, than we can give attention to. The Genesis reading today is so very difficult, and I think most preachers would tell you it's difficult to do justice with in 10 to 12 minutes on a monologue on a Sunday morning. So for that reason, I would give a commercial to our Summer Together podcast that does invite you into a conversation about those texts in a more extensive way. I suggest that here because I do feel like even the most difficult texts deserve our attention. And even though this gospel reading also seems very sweet and inviting, it too has a challenging message for us. I'd like for us to focus primarily on one little phrase, the example or the illustration that Jesus chooses to give as a sign of welcome. A cup of cold water. Even a cup of cold water, Jesus said to a little one. Those of you who may remember from days in English class, you'll remember the playwright Oscar Wilde. Oscar Wilde went through a lot of ups and downs in his life, including imprisonment. It was an ultimate humiliation for him. He was a celebrity at the time. All of that evaporated once he was convicted. And whenever the prison authorities moved him in public, people spit on him and jeered him when he was being transported from one place to the next. On one occasion when the crowd was particularly hostile, a friend of Wilde's showed up and was in the crowd and appeared and made a very simple gesture of friendship and respect that silenced the crowd, as the story goes. And what did he do? As Wilde passed by, handcuffed, head bowed in shame, his friend in the crowd simply raised his hat to him, the smallest of good deeds. We only know about this story because of Oscar Wilde's, the journaling of it in one of his diary entries. And in it, he writes these really beautiful words. He says, "Men have gone to heaven for smaller things than that. I do not know to the present moment whether my friend is aware that I was even conscious of his action. It's not a thing for which one can render formal thanks in formal words. I store it in the treasure house of my heart. I keep it there as a secret debt that I can never possibly repay. When wisdom has been profitless to me and philosophy barren, and the proverbs and phrases of those who sought to give consolation as dust and ashes in my mouth, the memory of that lowly, silent act of love has unsealed for me all the wells of compassion, made the desert blossom like a rose, and brought me out of the bitterness of lonely exile into harmony with the wounded, broken, and great heart of the world." So you hear a story like that and you think, all that for the tip of a hat? A cup of cold water? Tiny things that are not tiny at all. Silent acts of love, he called them, except not quiet at all, transformative. You know that from your own life experience. If you think back and go back into your memories about those times when people have extended to you a quiet grace or a gesture of welcome or friendship or love or compassion to you in a time when you most needed it, sometimes the ones when it was the quietest, the ones where it meant the most and transformative for you. I can think of examples for me. And as I read and reread the gospel this week, I became more convinced that living the Christian life of discipleship is really striving after this sort of living, after a more consistent life of love and kindness and welcome. It seems to me that the Christian life of discipleship is a series of steady decisions that are bent towards love, moment by moment, faithfulness, all with the mind of Christ. Most of us would die to have steady, consistent acts of faithfulness be the character that marks us. So many of us, we have moments of real faithfulness, moments of doubt, moments of real kindness and love in moments when we've really fallen short of that, and so most of us are a real sort of mixed bag on these things. And as I think about a cup of cold water and the tip of a hat and these kind of gestures that seem so very small but so very powerful, the ones that they're directed to, that it's a series of these kinds of seemingly ordinary things that make up the steady and consistent Christian life of discipleship. Maybe you're a part of it. Maybe you've seen it around town, but the KIPP Academy has bumper stickers. Maybe you've seen them on people's cars. They have a little slogan there that you may remember. It says, it's really short. It says, work hard, be nice. Have you seen those? That's the slogan, KIPP Academy. Work hard, be nice. Sounds really simple, right? Cup of water. Sounds really simple. Tip of the hat. Random acts of kindness. All these little phrases that we have. They sound very simple. But if they were simple, right, everybody'd be doing them. If they were simple, we'd live in a much different nation or world. Much stronger, sweeter, more pure, more peaceful, more gracious, more loving world. It's difficult because it's challenging to be steadily and consistently faithful. There's really so much that competes for our attention, such that our kindnesses and our loving and our graciousness is so spread thin, I think, because so much is competing for our love and our attention. I tend to think that all of us have a bit of a collective ADD. We move from the second sports game for our child in a week to the next camp we're sending them to, or from this work trip to that presidential tweet that we hear about on and on. We're just sort of bouncing from thing to thing and attention grabber to attention grabber and difficult thing to sweet thing and back again and all of the rest of it. So I wonder what are the disciplines that keep us steady in God, that keep us consistently coming back to the cups of cold water, the tips of the hat, those moments of faithfulness. We're gathered here doing some of those disciplines that center us or in prayer and worship, times at the table of communion, things like that. But I want to add one more to that, and that is our attention. Courtney Martin is a contemporary writer that I enjoy reading, has written that attention is our most precious resource. Attention. Attention to the moments of faithfulness, the words of Jesus. Attention to moments when we can welcome another. Attention to the opportunities to offer that cup of cold water, the moment of kindness, the ordinary thing that's actually extraordinary. So how do we do this? How can we be reminded that that this sort of faithful living is available to us, that's at our disposal, that's possible? I think to Abraham Joshua Heschel, who said it takes three things to attain that sense of groundedness or centeredness. And the beauty is that all three of them are things that we have. God, he says, a soul, and a moment. And the beauty of it, he says, is that we have all three of these things at any given moment at our disposal. God who is with us, a soul within us, a moment at the hand. God, a soul, a moment. These things that are available to us in each and every moment, each of them three, always here. God, a soul, a moment. And with every one of those things working together, we are able to be present, to give our attention to opportunities for faithfulness and devotion one to another. And with this combination, we can be present with any moment, any person, any feeling, any calling, any suffering, any need or want. And it's out of a sense of deep faithfulness to each moment that we are able to offer Christ's love for all, that we're not able to do this of our own resources, but only when we know that God is with us, that God has placed a good image within us, soul, that God has given us each and every moment to treasure, to cherish, to share. I don't know about you, but I approach this Independence Day holiday with lots of gratitude and lots of wonder. Some of you know I was a government history major in undergraduate school. I've always loved history ever since I was an elementary child. I've loved to read it and study it. I'm really grateful for the freedom to be here right now in this public space for worship. There are many of our sisters and brothers, of course, in other parts of the world, in this very moment that do not have that opportunity and freedom. I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for a nation that sets in front of itself certain ideals of life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. I'm grateful for certain rights that are articulated in our Constitution that all people have a right to. And I wonder what the future holds. Our nation holds together the most diversity of any nation on the face of the earth in history. Many have called it a grand experiment that the peoples of the whole world can actually live under one set of laws and values. It's a grand experiment, and I pray that we can continue to prove that it can be done with grace and mutuality and sacrifice for the common good for everyone. And I hope that we can see one another as worthy of kindness and generosity and love with the same rights to speech and religion and assembly and all the rest of it. From another part of the world, another time, another branch of our faith, I share the words of St. Simeon. He was in the Middle Ages, but in the Eastern Christian tradition, they have a wonderful way of viewing human beings not first as sinful, broken creatures, but first as good creatures created in the image of God. And I think it's helpful for us as we think of our friends and neighbors in our nation and around the world. St. Simeon said that we, the faithful, should look upon all as one single being and should consider that Christ dwells in each of them. We should have such love for each of them that we are willing to lay down our lives for them. Nor should we ever think or say that anyone is evil. We should look on everyone as good, as I have already said. Even should you see someone overwhelmed by some passion, loathe not the person, but the passions that fight against them. And if the person is mastered by desires and prepossessions, have an even greater compassion for him. For you too may be tempted, subject as you are to the same fluctuations of beguiling materiality, he says. All this to say is, this is a good word for us to view one another with kindness, to take moments to understand the innate goodness that God has placed in his creatures since creation, and that we're to understand other human beings as we understand ourselves, ones who are frail, ones who have passions that overtake us, ones who let our attention be scattered in all kinds of different directions and need to be centered once again in God. Many of you will no doubt remember the name William Wilberforce, leader, United Kingdom, British Parliament, a Methodist Christian, 18th century, led towards the abolition of the slave trade. But the other thing that he gave his life to was a lesser-known aspect of his life and work, and he called this the reformation of manners in society. And by this, he didn't mean sort of the way you cut your meat or where you set your spoon down or all those kinds of things, although that's pretty good too. What he meant by this, the reformation of manners, was that he was noticing around English society things that he called were tearing at the social fabric of the culture. And some of these things, he, as a British parliamentarian, he thought the government could help with, but he also called upon people of faith to initiate institutions and philanthropic organizations and educational endeavors to try to address those social ills that were really eating at the fabric of the nation. And among those were concern about child labor and poverty and child abuse and prison reform and healthcare reform and a host of other concerns and issues that he saw that people of faith and certainly citizens, all citizens, should be concerned with. And so he worked with many partners along the way to help establish those organizations. And as some historians count, over 200 of those organizations, small, medium, and large, were created by not what we would call not-for-profit organizations or other groups that sought to address these social ills. And a part of it was developing, yes, a sense of civility in the culture in terms of the way people talked and shared life together. I do have to say, as I was reading about this, one of the organizations back then had a name which has got to be my favorite of all the names. It's really long. They called it the Friendly Society for the Relief of the Poor, Infirmed, and Aged, and Single Ones of Good Character Who Have Seen Better Days. We've been there, all of us. It should be said, too, that Methodists, like Wilberforce, were at the forefront in England and here to give attention to the social fabric. It's key that in a nation like ours or any nation that there be people of faith that are giving attention, humble attention to the social fabric of the nation. And that Methodists are at the forefront of this. It was Methodists that started the Salvation Army. It's Methodists that initiated the YMCA. It's Methodists that had the only border schools along the southern United States. At one point, there were 14 that were scattered between California and Texas along the border. Today, there's one United Methodist Institute called Lydia Patterson Institute in El Paso. At one time, there were 14 of those all United Methodist schools along the border. All is to say, it is silent acts of love and faithfulness that are really not quiet acts, but humble ones that carry cups of cold water, tips of the hat, gestures of kindness, welcome, deep and abiding welcome, that truly do transform the ones doing the offering and the welcoming. Acts ordinary as a cup of cold water, or even acts as ordinary as a bread and a cup. Just think of it. What's laying on our table today for communion that we'll share in a moment, very ordinary things, a cup and some bread. But because of what they represent, the redeeming love of God in Jesus Christ, they become powerful, a means of grace, a way of connecting us once again to God and to each other. They become not just simple symbols, but transformational ones for your life and for mine. So it's my hope that as our nation moves along and as we sisters and brothers who are citizens together in this nation, that we might be mindful of things that do make us great, moments of kindness, moments themselves that are a gift and a treasure to be shared in Christian acts of faithfulness. And that any nation at any time in history, including this one, will find its glue and its fabric because it is humble people of faith that are attending to moments of opportunity to invest more deeply in those acts of faithfulness, public and personal, that give life, possibility, and unity to a nation like ours. And for all of it, we'll give thanks to God. Amen.